Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Kristen and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Guys, welcome back. Episode 181 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell, and alongside me, Johnny Stofko.
What's up, TK? What's up, everybody? 181, who are we talking to?
We've got John Cristani on the show today, and big first before, you know, happy new year to you, man. And
you as well.
Yeah, happy new year to everyone tuning into the show. It's a big year, 2018.
Year number three begins, and it's very important for everyone listening to understand the value of writing stuff down. We talk about it all the time. We're not trying to get it to hammer that point home. Actually, I am going to hammer that damn point home. If you want something, if you have a plan or you have a goal or you have a passion project, stop wasting time. You know what I mean? Write that down. Tell your friends about it. Create a damn vision board because it is all about persistence in overcoming these obstacles. But before you get to that persistence, you have to identify what you want to achieve. Mm-hmm. So 2018 is a big year for us. We start year number three. I'm John Cristani. This guy's been in and out of a lot of startups in that affiliate marketing side of things. He's made a lot of money, made a lot of networks, and right now he's going to share his message on wanting to impact the education system.
Yeah, he's an interesting guest. He's got a lot going. You know, he's obviously just killed it in that affiliate marketing space. So he's got a lot to offer in there. He's taking on a new venture now with his WeLearn.school, which is quite interesting to see that he's found a passion and he's driving through that now as well. So it's an interesting chat. So guys, it's a little bit something different. It's not really in the wellness space, but I think you can learn a lot about kind of, you know, going after your goals and other things like goal setting and all sorts of things.
I think it's surprising too, because if you look at Cristani on paper, it's always interesting these interviews because we'll have our notes prepared and we'll have a direction. We kind of will have a little talk through where we want to go. But you'll hear with this interview that, you know, the guy is wired way more than just what his resume says. If you Google him, you'll see degree from Northridge. You'll see he was involved with this company, the other thing, a lot of it in the online space, copywriting. But tune in because it's an awesome opportunity to kind of get, some good conversation about.
Yeah, everyone's got their own story.
Of trying to make your mark in this world. I think that's the bigger picture. Just a guy who just wants to make his mark.
Yeah, for sure. And he's made a pretty big mark. So good on him. Before we get John on the show, just a big shout out. Thanks for tuning in. Welcome back to 2018. And if you haven't yet, please tell your family and friends about the show. I think that's the best way for us to grow. You can subscribe for free on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or you'll find all the show notes and all the episodes at our website, www.thevisionboardpodcast.com.
Yeah, guys, if you search, the Vision Board Podcast on socials, you follow our page on Facebook and also our Twitter account, and then TK and I are both found individually on those spaces as well, but keep tuning in. We appreciate you. We'll keep pushing this as far as we can take it.
For sure. All right, guys. Welcome back to 2018. Our first show is with John Cristani. All right, guys, our special guest is John Cristani. John is an international renowned expert in affiliate marketing. He's also an entrepreneur. He's an educator with his WeLearn.school, and he's an advocate for passionate self-employment. We welcome the man, John Cristani. John.
What's up, guys? Happy to be here.
Yeah, man. What's up, John? We appreciate you sharing space with us. I want you to educate our listeners a little bit. Tristan and I, we bring on the vision board a wide array of guests, everyone from world champion fighters to best-selling writers. But I first heard of you from an article in the Business Insider a few years back and didn't have a podcast at the time. And the words internet affiliate marketing, for our listeners who are listening to this, could you explain what that is a little bit?
Sure. So there are a lot of companies out there that have products or services, and there are a lot of people on the internet that are looking for a product or service like a hotel or a car or a taxi driver. And affiliate marketers, all they do is they connect the companies, like Marriott or Hilton, with a consumer that is looking for, maybe a hotel to purchase or something. So, and they make a cut in the middle. So, An example is like Expedia.com. Like Expedia.com is one of the biggest airline companies in the world, and but they don't own any airlines. They don't own any airports. They don't own any flight patterns. They're just simply connecting, you know, companies like Delta or, you know, whatever the airlines are with people who want to book an airline, and they make a percentage commission. Other examples are like, you know, Uber's or, you know, cars.com, you know, cars.com is one of the biggest car companies in the world. They don't own any cars. They don't own any cars. They don't own any dealerships. They don't have any salespeople. They're just connecting people who want to buy cars with, you know, with cars. And, yeah, you know, they make a percentage commission. And, you know, Uber is another great example. They don't own any taxis. They don't have any drivers. They have very few employees. They're just connecting people with taxis, and they're making a percentage for making that whole transaction work. So those are, you know, it's a great business because it's very low overhead. You can do it from anywhere, and you can really the sky's the limit in terms of, you know, how much you want to make and how much focus you want to put on the business.
Now, was this something, I know you went to Cal State Northridge. I actually graduated from Fullerton. Mm-hmm. And, you know, time flies. I mean, 2010, you were in university, and where social media, where technology is in that space, affiliate marketing. Did you see this in 2010? Was this something that was a plan or, you know, a goal of yours to get into that market because you had an idea that you knew that could make you successful?
Sure. Well, you know, frankly, it just started because I was going to school during the day, and I was working, you know, a job as a waiter, and I just come back from a semester abroad, and you know, I read this book called The 4-Hour Work Week, and I was like, I got this bug in me. I'm like, I just want to make some money. I want to do better for myself. I want to be an internet entrepreneur, but I don't have much time. And I didn't have much time, but I could use, you know, I could access the internet and do things. So I just started trying to find people that really needed products, or, you know, that were really badly looking for products online. And the first market I got into was, there's a lot of guys, I was in this community, it's called the PUA community, and there are a lot of guys looking for advice on, you know, how to have, you know, how to avoid breakups, or how to get back together with a girl they really liked, or they dated at one point, but there wasn't a lot of, people didn't have good information about how to get that. So I found some products, and I found a way to put them in front of the right people that were looking for them in the search engines and whatnot. And, you know, I just started selling products pretty fast.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, from there, you know, I remember I had my first, you know, I remember the first time, first big day for me was I made $400 in a day, and as a waiter I was only making about $100 a day, and I said, oh my god, I didn't do anything today and I just made $400. I'm like, that's what I make all week as a waiter, because I was only getting four shifts a week. So I said, holy shit, I think there's something here. I don't even know what I'm doing. And from there, it you know, I kind of followed the trail, you know, followed the white rabbit, and rest became history. I got, you know, I got up to $500,000 a month at a certain point in time. So that was pretty nuts.
Yeah. How, you know, copywriting and things like that, how important is it to be a really good copywriter when it comes to things like affiliate marketing?
So one thing, a lot of copywriting's unbelievably important, but one of the things that a lot of people don't recognize about just being an entrepreneur or being a marketer or being whatever, you know, a business owner, is a lot of people are looking for the tricks, or they're looking for a formula. They're looking for, you know, okay, you know, I take A and then I plug it into B and then I do C and then I copy paste and throw this. They're looking for a tactic or a technique, and they're not focused on the customer. And what copywriting is all about is it's understanding at the end of the day, it's understanding, it's looking into your eyes and understanding what do you need? You know, what do you need? What are your problems you're facing right now? What things could you use in your life that would help you? And, because if somebody has a problem or an unmet need, there's money there, and that person has money, and when there's an unmet need and the person is not, you know, a broke, you know, Indian or whatever, you know, there's a potential to, you know, there's a potential sale and there's a potential for business. And copywriting is all about getting into the customer's minds. It's getting out of the whole tricks and everything, and it's getting into that customer's mind and connecting with them instead of focusing on just the tactical business side of things.
Yeah.
You're connecting and speaking directly to the customer in a way that's engaging, telling a story. And ultimately, no matter what we're doing in our lives, we're telling stories, and we're connecting with people. On a personal note, I used to hide a lot behind the computer to do copywriting. Copywriting is a really good skill. And one thing, I just got back from Tony Robbins' Date with Destiny.
Okay.
And, one thing I learned about myself is I need to, you know, I'm great at connecting with people online, but one of the things I'm making an effort more so of is connecting with just unbelievably talented, wide-eyed, ambitious, you know, people that are trying to change the world, and you know, working with them in some way. So I've really made it a mission of mine to get out of the internet, because copywriting is a great skill, but the one way it's held me back is that because it's so powerful in terms of helping me make money and sell things on the internet, you know, it still doesn't substitute for true human connection. So that's one thing I've been working on more, is meeting more really forward-thinking, ambitious individuals.
Okay. One of the greatest upsets in sports history was when Buster Douglas knocked out Mike Tyson, and he was asked in an interview years later, he was saying how that was one of the, you know, worst things that ever happened in his life. And the interviewer asked him why, and he said, because my whole camp made me believe I was the only one on the planet who knew I was going to win, but they didn't prepare me how to live after. So my question to you is, and what happened to Douglas, he put on all this weight, he was never the same guy, never could find that glory again. But when you went from $400 a week to $500,000 a month, share with us some stories maybe of those struggles. Because on paper, it's like, yeah, I got all this money, I have the freedom to do what I want to do. But that's a huge gap, and that's a big lifestyle change. So maybe tell us a story about that.
Great fucking question. Great, amazing question. One thing I wasn't prepared for is when I started making that amount, I didn't even think I could make that amount. It was ridiculous. And I became complete. I had about how many people? I had a number of people working for me at the time, maybe like six or something like that. And they were all overseas. I'd actually bought a house in Brazil and to use as our offices. And I spent a couple months down there, but you know, I had all my employees working out of there, and I became extremely paranoid because I didn't believe in myself as much as I think I should have. And I became paranoid because my company was making so much money and my employees knew it. And I got taken advantage of massively. My own paranoia about, you know, my employees are going to steal from me, or they're going to find ways. I'm paying these guys. Some guys I were on commission, so I was paying them too much. And my paranoia took control of me, and I made a lot of bad business decisions that caused me to ruin my company, and which was pretty crazy. Just because I was, and I ended up getting a lot of money stolen from me by a number of different employees of mine in subversive manners, you know, because I had a lot of I a lot of things were going on, and it was a very profitable operation. I had a lot of people steal IP from me, steal campaigns from me. Also, another thing is my ego went through the roof. My ego went through the roof, and I believed I was like a magical, godlike being. And I believed everything I touched could turn to gold. I was like, I can market anything. I still believe to this day I can essentially market anything, but I believed any business I got into, I was, you know, it's going to turn to gold, and I could do anything. And it was cool, you know, that's cool. But the problem with that was I ended up making a lot of bad investments, a lot of bad business decisions. I lost a ton of money because I got so full of myself, and I took risks that were unbelievable risks in business, and some of them didn't pay off, and I leveraged myself way too far. And ultimately, you know, another thing is I didn't surround myself, you know, I surrounded myself with, there's always been a nagging kind of self-doubt somewhere deep inside of me. So I always surrounded myself, even at this time, you know, I'm making crazy amounts of money, but I'm surrounding myself with people at the same basic level. And nobody who challenged me, I never got that message. I have to surround myself with people who challenged me. So I got a lot of hangers-ons. I got a lot of kind of people in my entourage that would go with me to these exotic places. You know, I'd pay for everybody to go on trips to Morocco, or I'd pay for people to go to Brazil or different places in the world, you know, and, you know, Fiji, et cetera. And I surrounded myself with the wrong people. So I call it my MBA. You know, I made a ton, and I also wasted a ton. And that was my MBA, and master's of business degree. So, so I learned a lot of lessons. So those were the big, big lessons. I guess if anybody's listening to this, the insight I'd give you is check yourself before you wreck yourself. If you're onto something really good, great, milk it for all it's worth, but understand. You know, there's in the book, The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho, there's a quote, you know, he says, there's something called beginner's luck. And when you start off on your path, on your journey, when you're truly in line with your beating soul and you start on that journey, the world's going to conspire to help you. There's going to be a moment of luck, and maybe it's a coincidence. Maybe it's an odd coincidence, or somehow I just made this money or something. It might be some weird coincidence, stroke of luck. And don't mistake that stroke of luck for your own personal intelligence. Understand that that's just a message from the world saying, hey dude, you're doing something right, you're doing something that resonates with you, instead of thinking I'm the fucking genius, because I'm not the fucking genius. I'm just now
tuning into it, like allowing that frequency to come through you.
Exactly. Rather than thinking it's all fucking you. And the other message I would say is, As you move, you know, you keep, you know, your friends, you know, throughout all of life. But I think people have to understand that as they become more successful, if you really want to lock that down, no matter where you are in life, you should be surrounding yourself with people who challenge you, who truly challenge you. I had so much self-doubt, and I didn't believe in my own success fully, which is why I surrounded myself with people who were, you know, just not as ambitious or not, who never challenged me. But if I had done, I think peer groups are really important, which is why, you know, you guys have interviewed people like Robert Greene and what have you. I think that's amazing. I actually, my buddy, you probably just saw him walk by behind me. Robert Greene is writing a whole chapter in his book, about my friend who runs this company here.
Are you? I'm just going to throw a name out there because before we even started, you're not at Ryan Blair's, are you?
No.
Okay. It was worth the guess. I'm seeing people walk by, but yeah.
Right. The chapter right after 50 Cent in Robert Greene's new book is going to be about my buddy, which is kind of funny.
That's cool.
So, but yeah, once you start, I think that's a really important thing as you start moving up in life. And I would have avoided a lot of the mistakes that I ended up making if I was more intelligent about who I surrounded myself with as I started advancing in my career and my path.
Mm. John, that peer group that you spoke about, is it one of those things that when you guys are interacting, you guys are telling each other what you think might not be doing that great in your lives right now or in your business? Like, how do you guys interact as a group?
With my friends.
Yeah, you're talking about a peer group and, you know, obviously I'm sure there's a bit of accountability between all of you in there. Like, how far do you guys go in terms of calling each other out on stuff?
I personally, part of it is I think of it partially as just kind of bros or people hanging out with people. I think it's always got to be fun. You know, it's not, you know, when I say I'm hanging out with, you know, like informing your peer group, I think it's important just to hang out with people who are passionate, and who are forward thinking and who are working on interesting stuff and not, it should be exciting. It's not for me, it's not a formal thing. It's not a formal thing like, okay, like, let me list out my challenges. Like, you list out your challenges. Like, who can you connect me with? Who can solve these challenges in my business? Okay. Thank you. Okay. That works for me. Who can I connect you with? That'll help. It's nothing like that. It's more like, dude, you know, for me, a lot of it is talking about science fiction and hanging out in jacuzzis and drinking, you know, having a glass of wine or something like that. It's hanging out, going to a bar with my friend and having a beer and talking about, you know, what does it mean that, you know, Bitcoin is going nuts right now. And what does that mean for the world? Why are people putting $500 billion of cash into this, whether it works or it doesn't, what does that mean? Yeah. Does that maybe, you know, we'll chop, you know, there's so much excess capital in the world right now that has no safe place to go, or, you know, oh, the stock markets are, you know, nobody trusts the stock markets anymore. It's a rigged game. Like, oh, that's, is that true? Is that not true? You know, what's the sentiment there? Yeah. Talking about macro issues, what is Elon Musk's ultimate goal? You know, frankly, I talk with a lot of my friends about Elon Musk a lot.
Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Is he
going to
build a space station, or is he just building a trucking company that goes into space? You know, is he looking at himself as the railroad to space? You know, just like, you know, or is he actually care about getting to Mars, or does he want other companies to build Mars?
Yeah.
He's probably not trying to fucking actually develop Mars. He just wants to build the railroad to Mars. Huh. These are the sorts of conversation, you know, what does the future of education look like? Why is it, you know, why hasn't it changed? What forces are at play? What's the government regulation here involved? What does education in the future look like? Why hasn't it been disrupted? Like, just thought experiments. I like connecting with people whose intelligence resonates on on a higher level who are thinking about mining asteroids or who are about changing the fabric of society rather than just trying to create a slightly better iPhone case and figuring out how to sell it on Amazon. You know, that's easy. There's millions of people doing that.
Yeah, John, I have a list in my notes of various companies that you have been a part of and got off the ground. And we brought up Robert Greene, who's a big influence to mine. TK and I have sat down with him. And in Life Mastery, he talks about, if you become obsessed with a passion, you will then begin to see it manifest in all around you. So it's something that I've always kept, that one, like, because there was a lot of years in my 20s where I knew I would wake up knowing that I wanted to do something great. I didn't know how to channel it. So with that intent and, you know, speaking on creativity and understanding these projects that you get into, the one you're currently in right now, We Learn, what is your process of decision-making go when you have these sort of ideas, and how do you take that energy and decide, all right, John, I'm going that way with it?
It was a process. It was a process that, honestly, it started years ago. It started many years ago. Same what I'm talking to you right now. It started as a series of conversations, talking about what is the future of education? Just talking about maybe the education industry is fucked up, but what does it look like in the future? I don't believe it's, teachers need to be paid 20% more. That doesn't change anything. That doesn't, if we're talking about, we want to make things 10% more efficient or teachers paid 20% more. No, LeBron James is getting paid $50 million a year. How do you get a teacher paid $50 million a year? Mm. The top entrepreneurs are making, billions of, are making shitloads of money. I guess that's not as good of a thing. But let's say, the top website owners are making a lot of money. How can we create, this economy in teaching?
John, do you feel though that do you feel though?
Yes, sorry, go on.
Do you feel that the disparity though of the top entrepreneurs and the top athletes of what they make? Because I agree with you on the teachers. They don't make anything, and they're teaching our young ones. But do you think that that's a bigger signal of the system of education is messed up, needs change, than the teachers?
It's the underlying. At the end of the day, yes, you're 100% right. It's the underlying system that is messed up, and it's not about looking at the system and saying, okay, what tweaks can I make? Okay, maybe we should take a little more tax money and allocate a little more tax money to a little more education, or maybe we should, make sure instead of updating the textbooks only once every 20 years, we're updating them once every, 2 years or something like that. Mm-hmm. There's a systemic problem here that is ultimately causing all of these other problems. I mean, for one, it's not a free market. It's not a free market education. It's basically controlled by the government, and it's compulsory. It's compulsory, controlled by, there's no free markets there. Part of the reason, the more heavily regulated an industry is, the less, the slower it is to be disrupted. It's been one of the least invested in industries. Everybody wants to create an Uber of something or a social network or something like that because they've seen the money go there. I believe there's a huge lack of innovation, quote Peter Thiel, I believe there's a huge lack of innovation in the world right now because we were on the moon 50 years ago, and now we are, on Facebook and Twitter. And, these are the biggest innovations of our time. Why is Facebook and why is Twitter the biggest innovation of our time? Are the most used. I think it's really sad. We should be looking at things. We should be figuring out, how do we get to Mars? How do we get to the next thing? How do we create an education system that is actually going to, education should be free. It's freaking, everything should be free. I love what Khan Academy is doing. A lot of people do all their learning from YouTube. But there needs to be a little more structure behind it. And nobody's created that vision yet. So that's, it's an amalgamation of all those things. And how do I choose my direction? It was a big pain point for me too, in a personal thing. I felt like education was one of the biggest betrayals of my entire life. I believe it was, it's, you know, our education system is completely based on false premises. It's built to create, turn us into docile corporate servants. Mm. That's the whole premise of education. If you want to learn how to do, you know, things that are useful in the workforce, you know, you can condense that all into, you know, very few years. Whereas if, you know, what education system is really meant, it's based on the Prussian, you know, the Prussian, you know, Prussians created our education system and Prussians became all Nazis, but it's based on really forming people into docile servants of the industrial age. And I, you know, for me, that resonated a lot with me because that was the direction I was going in life. And that represented everything I was against. So this particular mission meant a lot to me, you know, but, and this has become my overriding direction for everything. I can't think of anything that would be a more efficient or beneficial use of my time.
Yeah.
So that's how I decided my direction.
What's up, guys? Be sure to pick up your free copy of Conversations with Champions. This is our free ebook, which is comprised of inspirational quotes from past guests that we've had on the show.
Get inspirational quotes from champions such as Evander Holyfield, Jonathan Thurston, Grant Cardone, Gary Vee, Larry Holmes, Mario Andretti, Anthony Mundine, Joe DeFranco, and many, many more.
To pick up your free copy now, just simply go to our website, www.divisionboardpodcast.com/ebook. Put your name and email in the slot. It takes about 10 seconds, and we'll send you the book directly to your inbox. Now back to the show.
Yeah, John, with We Learn School, specifically, what did you want to be teaching? Are we teaching about the expertise that you've created in affiliate marketing, or is it a totally different sort of syllabus that you want to kind of bring up in this?
Totally, totally. Well, I've taught what I do in affiliate marketing, and part of it was part of how We Learn was created was because of the immediate, you know, I started teaching what I know about affiliate marketing as a test to say, hey, is there a way for me to, you know, as a teacher, you know, what's the way to be a teacher online in a scalable fashion? Mm. And I did that and I made, you know, I did that this year and I made, you know, over $1 million doing that, you know, relatively fast. You know, I've been most of the marketing and everything was created within this time frame of like 4 to 6 months. Mm. But what We Learn is really an education platform. It's a platform for, it's an ecosystem. It's really a platform for teachers to go on and plug in the courses. You know something, you know something. We all have our skills. Maybe it's woodworking. Maybe it's, you know, I don't know, how to pick up chicks. Maybe it's how to identify how much an art piece should be priced at. And YouTube is great for some content, you know, for some of that content. But when something goes beyond a 5 to 15 minute long video, there generally needs to be some sort of structure for more, you know, for copywriting, for example, you know, or teaching some skills, there needs to be more of a structured platform for teachers to go on and sell their courses on. And the problem with, you know, and
is this like Udemy?
Just like Udemy, except the problem with the current market is Udemy, Coursera, Udacity, they're not about creating a rich environment for the teacher. They have sales teams to get teachers to post on their platform in Udemy's case, but they're about taking as much money from the teachers as possible. And our goal is to have, just like Google's main constituent was the webmaster. I think whatever you do, you have to have a main constituent you are making very rich. I know I'm painting it in kind of capitalistic terms, but Google, it was webmasters. Google said, hey, look, if you code your website according to HTML standards and you have all these meta tags and meta keywords and you don't use Flash, you don't use images with text on them, you use stuff that our search bots can recognize, we're going to give you a massive benefit. We're going to give you more web traffic than you can imagine. And you're going to get people coming to your site. You're going to get, you know, you're going to get people come, you know, you're going to get AdSense revenue. You're going to get people to Expedia.com or Airbnb, whatever. Just do it by our standards. You know, people looking, I'm looking to fly from Chicago to New York, and they'll give you the top search rankings if you just code it according to what they want. And so they're benefiting webmasters. Instagram was benefiting people who understand how to take good pictures. You know, Snapchat is benefiting people who are just really genuine people and living cool lives and, you know, having fun with, you know, their things. And, you know, an education platform, it just seemed obvious to me, it's got to benefit the teachers. Yeah. It's got to benefit teachers. And Udemy is not trying to benefit the teachers. Udacity and Coursera, they're trying to help place people in jobs. But, you know, they're working on partnerships with like Google or Adobe or HP. But they're still not all about, they're not looking at that and saying, how do we create an ecosystem where teachers are, you know, teachers can earn $10 million a year. And we kind of reverse engineer everything from that perspective. And tying that in with an ability to have a third-party developer ecosystem similar to Salesforce, where companies can plug in MailChimp or Aweber or Infusionsoft or Salesforce, and teachers can create an ecosystem for them to really build operations or organizations around the traffic or the visibility of the audience they gain on our platform. That was kind of the thing. So
take me through this. So I'm a coach and I'm a teacher, and I have a course for new personal trainers and new fitness coaches. And I have the course already laid out. I have the syllabus, the videos. Do I just go to welearn.school and I just upload that stuff, or do I deal with what's the process like?
Exactly. You go online, you say create a course, and it's just literally just fill in the blanks, upload the video or shoot the video right there.
Okay.
And that's the thing, because one of the things holding people back from you're further ahead than most people. Most teachers, most people with knowledge and something that they can share, stories that they can share, don't have anything mapped out. They don't actually know where to begin.
Mm. Yeah, it's already done. How are you buffering that? Like, what is stopping somebody to do that process? And maybe the content just isn't good enough, or maybe they're teaching their own, agenda per se on some BS sort of things. Because in the fitness industry, you have a lot of gurus and a lot of certain approaches on nutrition, or maybe somebody goes on there to put the course on my way or the highway sort of thing. Is there any buffering process of that, of like, oh, this course is shit, this isn't good enough for our platform, or this one's really good?
I think it's like you. Personally, we don't have that. It's like YouTube. Anybody can upload anything. If you're teaching people things that are maybe downright, you know, there are certain things I know YouTube disallows, you know, like, you know, if like Nazis go on and like start like, you know, how to be a neo-Nazi or something like that, like, you know, but it's really a free platform. You know, it's built, you know, that's the problem with the other things. They're selling software as a service. So, it's a platform. You know, it's the creativity doesn't come from us. It comes from other people. You know, I just have an understanding of, you know, from a teacher's perspective, what elements need to be involved for it to market. I know that people are tired of the whole like standing behind a podium and just lecturing for hours.
Yeah.
You know, I know that people don't like, a 2 hour long video of a lecture behind a podium that is not, you know, and as a YouTuber, I know people like to be engaged. And I also know that people don't want to just hear facts and figures the whole time. People also, you know, in many cases, they want to hear a story. They want to hear personal things that are related to them from that person's life or perspective, because I don't want to learn from somebody who's unsuccessful or who hasn't. I don't want to learn copywriting from, you know, some idiot who claims to have copywriting. I know stories are a key measure of engagement. And the last thing I know is that people expect free. And what Udemy does not understand at all is people, everything leads with free. To build an audience, you have to lead with free content. It's not about helping people sell more shit. It's about creating a relationship. And if somebody wants to follow that teacher or follow that, you know, that subject matter expert or whatever, you've got to always lead with free. You've got to lead with your best foot forward. And I think that's essential to really anything in the world that is going to really rock education.
Yeah. Hey, once the contributors put their stuff onto the platform, do they then have the option, given your marketing background and your expertise in that area, can they do they get in touch with you and create a strategy on how they're actually going to sell what's on there?
Yeah, all 5,000 instructors, just you have my cell phone and I'm going to help. No, I can't.
No, I mean, like, is there an instruction book? Is there, like, are you giving him a guide?
I don't think Sergey Brin is showing everybody who creates a profile on YouTube how to move up in the how to market their channel. I actually do have information to show people how to market some things.
Because you would get something out of it by them getting better as well, right?
Exactly. So part of that is we have free information. We have a whole free training course on how to take your course and how to market your paid premium stuff on your back end at the end of the course, because once you've created that relationship, people, if you've done a good job and if you're engaging and if people went through all of your things, you create a relationship with somebody, and hopefully it's somebody who wants to follow you around, and so hopefully it's somebody who wants to engage with you further. So I have training about how they can sell more things in, you know, how they can create a living as a teacher and have premium products they can sell on the back end. And that's kind of what we're in the midst of, you know, just from an internal perspective, we're developing actively. Yeah. And then from an external perspective, where, you know, we're showing people there's, you know, we're hoping that, you know, we're creating this third party development ecosystem. Like that's a very core part of, this trifecta here, you know, teachers, students, and, you know, third-party developer ecosystem. And, you know, creating that so that people can plug in, so that when a student registers for their free course, you know, they are, you know, they're in that teacher's email list, or they're in that teacher's CRM, or they can send text updates every so often to that student, et cetera. So all that stuff is, you know, really, it's all about helping the teachers market themselves and offer premium things to the students. And we believe we're going to unleash just a tsunami of creativity in a otherwise, I think, fairly stagnant industry that's been, you know, I think it's cool.
Yeah.
So
I think it's amazing as well. Once again, I'm a quote guy, but Tupac, man, he has a famous quote, and he says, "The world, we don't need more actors, we don't need more athletes, we need more teachers." And I love what you're doing with the, you know, the WeLearn.School, because it also sounds to me it's a great opportunity to challenge the status quo of that system, of a system that's obviously not working, when you have younger people who aren't, you know, the auditory sense. You know, they just have to study something and regurgitate it, but they don't keep anything with them. So I think focusing on the teacher side of things to change that game, I think it's definitely a positive thing, man. So, yeah, keep doing what you're doing.
Cool. Yeah, do you want to hit the personality part?
I say we rock and roll, man. The time has flown.
Yeah.
Let me start it off. All right, John Cristani, if three of your closest friends were sitting at a table and you weren't in the room, what sort of things would they be saying about you?
They would, I'm trying to think. They would be saying, The guy has a beautiful daughter. They'd definitely be saying that. They'd be saying that guy's energy is off the hook. Yeah. They said that guy has an infectious energy, and he's just, you know, freaking crazy. We love it. That guy's lit up. Hopefully they would say he's a bit of a family man. I know. Yeah, they would definitely say that. I'm thinking of a number of friends of mine. They would say he likes to have fun. We've done some crazy things. You know, obviously, you know, I like take all my friends out and we go rent Lamborghinis and race around the desert or, you know, shit like that. So like, that's the sort of stuff they'd be saying. So.
Nice. All right,
second. He loves popcorn. He's a popcorn fiend.
That stuff is terrible for you, John Cristani. Stop eating popcorn.
No, it's like mostly air, and like you put cheese on it.
Oh,
and
no.
Like, I have my whole mix. I have like, you know, chives.
Stop
and, like,
it. I'm a coach. That dude, popcorn.
Basil.
Yeah, hummus and carrots,
really?
Man.
That's horrible?
Hummus and carrots.
Oh. Sorry, hold on one second. Yeah. Oh, dude.
What do you got there? Some popcorn?
He looks important. He looks important.
What?
He looks important, that guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
No popcorn.
All right, we're going to take you back to your childhood. Actually, John, I know you're in LA now, but where did you actually grow up?
I grew up in Pacific Palisades, which is in a little nice neighborhood of LA.
Okay, perfect. Just back to your childhood. Your childhood bedroom wall, what posters did you have on it?
The posters I had, dude, great question. System of a Down.
Oh, my brother loves
Queens
that.
Of the Stone Age. I had System of a Down, Queens of Stone Age. I had a Godsmack poster. I had a bunch of pictures of me hanging out with friends around LA. Some girls I liked. I like taking out those disposable cameras, and I would just take photos, and I'd save some moments. I had a poster of Bruce Lee,
yeah.
With a really cool quote, which I forget now.
Oh.
Which is bad.
Was it the one? If I told you I was good, you'd say I was boasting. If I told you I wasn't good, you'd say I'd be lying.
No. Here, let me.
I'll
give you. I actually, I'm trying to think of that. This, I know it. I know it. I know it. It's one of his most. It's one of his most.
Was it Be Like Water?
Knowing is not enough. We must apply. Oh, yeah. Willing is not enough. We must do. So that was the quote, and it was him with like. He's just a freaking insane individual. So those were the posters up on my wall. Yeah.
Awesome. Excellent. Yeah, I normally would ask a different question, but who do people tell, you know, you got this purple velour blazer, you know, our listeners and fans aren't going to see it. Your beard is off the hook as well. Who do people say you look like?
People say I look like that guy from Weeds.
Okay.
There's a guy on Weeds, I guess, that people think I look like. People have said I look like this comedian that has a big beard and he's kind of like lumberjack style. I don't know. I definitely who do you think?
Zach Galifianakis for sure.
Oh yeah, I've got that. Yeah. Zach Galifianakis. Yeah. I've gotten that one. Yep, okay. I've got that's
Alan.
That's.
Alan.
I got way more style than that.
For
hat,
sure.
Though. Come on,
well,
man. Come on, man.
If you go back early days, man, because I grew up in Ohio. He was a stand-up in Ohio at I think Ohio University, and he used to be a little bit different. But the beard and the style, yeah, you're definitely pulling off more than old Zach G.
Yeah.
All right, John, final question. You're going to be hosting a private dinner party. You got 5 invites. Now, only rules, no family or friends, but you can invite anyone dead or alive. Who would you like to invite?
Elon Musk. Napoleon Hill. I'd invite Musk. Napoleon Hill. You know what? Fuck it. I'd invite Chris Farley. Mm-hmm. I think that guy's awesome. You know what? He's going to keep us entertained. I'd invite Brad Pitt. And then, just because he's a fucking badass, and that's kind of cool. And then I'd invite Aristotle.
Nice selections, man.
Good, brother.
All right, John, before we let you leave, everyone check out John's stuff, welearn.school, or you can find his personal stuff at www.johncristani.com. On Facebook, he's the official John Cristani, and you can also find his Twitter and YouTube. He's very active on there, and he's at John Cristani. John.
Awesome.
Yeah, brother.
Awesome stuff, guys.
Thanks a lot for doing this. We appreciate you sitting down with us, man. That was fun.
Yeah, dude. That was awesome. Cool, that was fucking awesome. I hope I gave some good content that your people will enjoy.
Yeah.
No, you definitely.
Yeah, man.
Johnny, that was John Cristani, man.
Hopefully that this guy follows through with WeLearn.school and his mission and his passion with wanting to impact that education system. Hopefully it's an intentions of good.
Yeah.
Like wanting to truly impact. And I could tell from the chat it is, because that education, he said he felt like, he was disheartened with it. And
yeah, I think a lot of people feel that way.
It's exactly, I definitely could relate of like looking back and seeing those years as an 18-year-old going, sitting through university, not really learning life skills, really not learning anything that I would be able to take with me. I think it comes in, and then the teacher wages, man, we could go on and on how much that pisses me off about some teachers making 30 grand a year when athletes are making 50 million. I think with this guy's mission, if he's successful in identifying that system of education is not working,
yeah,
and make it more about the teachers, it'll definitely be a positive influence on all that are involved.
Yeah, hopefully, the school system becomes more than just a textbook, reading out of a textbook and things like that, which we unfortunately had to experience. Yeah.
We're experts on regurgitation.
You're just getting good at, some people are just good at taking tests. They're good at social situations, or I haven't spoken. Obviously, I've taken to a lot of Aussie athletes lately, and a lot of them are getting in touch with, doing presentations on mental health and things like that. And one of the suggestions for them is, wouldn't it be very beneficial if you had a speaker every week come into the school and give an hour talk on positive mental health or sharing an experience so people can see that it's okay, because some people are struggling out there and some people are flourishing. But both sides can benefit from that for sure.
I don't want to speak for everybody, but I feel that I'm not off base by saying we're all struggling. I feel that it's something that needs to go out of the taboo realm of developing ourselves and understanding that maybe even the language we use about depression and mindset could be changed, because I think depression has a kind of a connotation to it, a negative feel to it, because it's like, oh, you're in that category or you have that, rather than saying, hold on. It's a way of human life. It's part of our process. So we have to develop ways and strategies and systems, starting in our schools, that help educate that 7-year-old, that 14-year-old, that 20-year-old, hey, I'm not weird. I am normal. Let me learn about these sort of things rather than what pi is or how to do, an algorithm sort of thing that I won't have to use ever in real life.
Yeah.
So the platform that this guy
has. I think maybe specific, like Mark Devine spoke about it on the show before. He spoke about us doing English. He did an extra year. When you guys go to college, you do an extra year of English. Like, at 18 years old, why the hell are you doing an extra year of English? Like,
Now I can see if it's the history of, poetry. If it's something that you're learning about John Locke.
But a lot of you do it and then enter another, you could do finance after that, or you could do teaching, you could do anything, but I don't really see it. But I think some more creative, and when we're back at high school, I think to be more specific, it's things like how to public speak, how to creative writing.
I had learned that at 27 years old. It was I had to go find a course
that
was built around public speaking and realize that, oh my, this is what I'm good at. And it's almost like people say, oh, it's a fear of mine. No, you just haven't skilled yourself yet. You just haven't learned that language. Anything that you're afraid of or that's holding you back that you say, I'm not, that drives me insane is as a coach is when a client says, I'm not good at this. It's like, no, this is your first day learning this. Yeah. You don't know this
language. Everyone had a day one. That's the thing.
Everybody, and you know, the first 10, what does he say, jobs? The first 1,000 drafts of everything is shit. Mm. It's like you have to just get through those drafts. And, you know, I would have loved to take in courses like that as a 16-year-old. It would have definitely had a positive effect on my mindset.
Yeah, some positive stuff that comes
out. Playing on your strengths.
Even like proper nutrition had it.
Oh, my.
You know what I mean? Like,
dude,
even like at school, you go to a school canteen, or what do you guys call it?
Yeah, the lunch, the cafeteria.
Cafeteria.
Yeah.
And it's just like they're selling pizza, burgers, and
corn dogs,
crazy stuff.
Tater top shit.
You can get all the ice creams.
Shit, man.
Yeah. Potato chips.
Candy bars.
You know, all sorts of stuff, man. It's just like, it starts with the school, doesn't it? It's
informative. Like, we had you hear me bring it up a couple times over the last few years, but we would have people come into our classrooms and teach us how to read labels. How to read nutritional labels. Let's think about that. Initially, oh, it's good, they're teaching us how to read the label. No, real food, they don't have labels.
Mm.
You should have people come into these schools and teach them what real food is.
Yeah,
not
nutritional
space food.
Foods, yeah.
Like, real, I shouldn't have to learn how to read labels. I should learn about why it's important to have colorful foods on my plate.
Yeah. I agree.
I have a lot of resentment about that system, because if you look at my hometown, there is a serious, serious epidemic with addiction and obesity and depression and people's lives ending way too early. And I think it's all related. It's all related to that damn person teaching. This is a fucking horrible generalistic approach. But the whole idea that people are going into second graders and teaching them to read labels rather than empowering them on what real food is. There's just different. Yeah, anyway, it's a gross misconception. But anyway, yeah. Something needs to change. My hometown's suffering. And, you know, one day I'll get to the point where hopefully I can have an impact on those people in education. But
there you go. That's a goal for you, brother.
Yeah, huge goal.
All right, guys. Let's.
Ran over. My bad.
Johnny started on fire this year.
Yeah, dude. I'm just passionate, brother. That gratitude.
There you go. All right, guys. Thank you for tuning in to today's show. Really appreciate it. Next on the show, I think it's going to be Layla Ali, unless there's an interview before. I'm not sure, but it should be Layla. And
who's Layla Ali?
Hey?
Who's Layla Ali?
Who do you think she is?
Muhammad Ali's daughter, world champion herself. Man, empowering women all across the globe. We've been stoked about this.
I don't even think we'll introduce her as Muhammad Ali's daughter.
No, let's have her bring it up.
Yeah, she's just...
She's her own woman.
Yeah, she's just someone that's
powerful.
Yeah, she doesn't live off her father, man. So yeah. I think it's
True. See, that's important.
Yeah, I think that's what I really like about her—the fact that she is an Ali, but that's not what she's about.
But I got excited just interviewing Cal Fussman, just because Cal Fussman lived with Ali.
Oh, I still got Ali. Mate, I'm 35, and I've still got Ali memorabilia on my bedroom wall.
Yeah. Oh my God. If I need a little pep of inspiration, I go right to the Grumble in the Jungle, right to the press conference before the fight, and you got Ali guys go to YouTube and watch this, and he's looking at the reporters. Screw Conor McGregor. You guys think that he's the first one. Ali looks at these reporters and goes, I know you got him. I know you picked him. I'll show you how great I am.
That's insulting, Conor McGregor. Jesus.
What are you talking about?
People thinking that Conor McGregor is on that level.
Yeah, not even on the same level, guys.
He's not even in the top 100 athletes in the world. Jesus Christ. All right, let's end with that. All right, guys. I can't wait for bringing you the next episode. So tune in. If you haven't yet, please subscribe via iTunes, SoundCloud, or Stitcher. All the show notes you can find at www.thevisionboardpodcast.com.
Share with your friends. Follow me on all socials at Johnny Stofko.
There you go. Just follow him at Johnny Stofko. I'm at Tristan Cannell. Guys, we'll check you next week. Stay safe, and we'll check you soon.
Welcome to the Vision Board Podcast. Stories of success from around the world.
You guys are scratching an itch, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful, is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
Whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working harder. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and you know, you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are two for two.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey,
please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.